This is the Path of Legends podcast, episode number 3, the only podcast that teaches you 5th edition in a old school deadly style. I am Vince, sitting with Sal.
Hello.
And Eric.
Hey, folks.
We're back with another show. This is episode number 3, like I said, and we've got a couple topics this week that'll hopefully tweak some ideas in your brain, and, you know, we'll see what's going on. We've been getting some good feedback here, especially with our Monster Hunters segment. Everybody seems to enjoy the little segue we have going in with the our hero. What was his name again, Sal?
Oh, that is, what's his name? Iron Wolf.
Iron Wolf.
Yeah. That was his last, I believe his name, wasn't it?
I don't know. He just keeps leaving these tapes on my doorstep, so. And I just keep showing him in the show, so. I don't know how he knows exactly what our topic is going to be for the week, but he does know.
He seemed like a nice guy last time we met him.
Yeah. Definitely. So let's head right into the adventure path and take a look at that.
I did not come hundreds of miles and slay thousands of orcs simply to be thwarted here.
The adventure path.
So in the adventure path, we're going to talk a little bit about two different methods here. And 5th edition has the advantage and disadvantage method. When we played Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, Gary Gygax came up with a D6 method, which is kind of gave the player the advantage, disadvantage in a way. It was a little bit weird because Gary always made up this rule on the fly, and you would just... I'll go over his rule first since we all know the advantage, disadvantage. And then we'll get to that in a second in case you're new to 5th edition. But you would roll in a situation where you would have an advantage or disadvantage, you would roll a d6, and Gary would have a certain number in his mind, say 1 to 6. Say he would say 5. So if you rolled that 5, you would get the advantage. And depending on how far away from it you were with the number, say you rolled a 1, you definitely would be disadvantaged. But if you rolled around a 4 or a 6, he would still give you the advantage depending on the situation. Now, have you guys... Eric, have you ever used that in any of your games?
Probably, but again, it's not consistent to use that in particular.
Yeah.
For me, advantage or disadvantage is, let's look at the situation. You guys hit yourselves well. You guys ready to ambush. You know what? I'm going to give you guys a +2 to hit. I usually didn't worry about that unless I was doing surprise, which was also on a D6.
Yeah.
And the surprise usually gave one group or the other bonus rounds of attacks, which was very lethal if one side got it. So I didn't usually throw a bonus to hit on top of that because, you know, maybe bodies hitting the floor left and right.
Well, yeah, the surprise rolls in first edition were just amazing because sometimes you'd go 2 rounds and not have an attack at all, and then the monsters would be attacking you twice, and you're sitting there going, duh, I'm really surprised.
I never heard them coming down the hallway.
No, yeah. What about you, Sal?
Never used it once.
No. What do you use?
Basically, it would be. Here's the thing. I find that very organic because it came from Gary's mind and he felt whatever came to his mind and he ran that at that point. Mm-hmm. I did similar things, but also. It was during the game. I didn't do it during character creation or anything to that effect. It was like a lot like Eric was saying. It depends on the situation, and the negatives and the positives in that particular encounter.
It wasn't
a set thing at all for me.
Yeah, I tell you the truth. I think a lot of it was the players having to convince me how well they set something up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I don't think I've ever used this roll D6 method myself. I know I heard a lot of DMs talk about it and hear Gary talk about it in his magazines and everything, but I used to only use this method when it came to, like, searches or finding really difficult things if I had to, or a situation where it was one of those where you just, everybody was arguing and you just needed something to just get through the situation. Roll D6, can you get the number? Boom, you get what you want type thing.
Right.
I don't really think it was a great method at all. I evolved it into a whole, since it really wasn't skills or anything in first edition, until later on, and when we called it 1.5e, they started adding in some minor skill stuff. I used a 3d6 method, and then depending on the difficulty of the situation, I would add a die or or to, you know, pull a die away and have them roll under a certain number and add the particular statistic of maybe strength or, you know, dexterity, depending on what's going on in the situation. So that's all I did. I have to say, out of the two methods, the disadvantage method is probably the better of the two.
Absolutely.
Oh, it's certainly the more intuitive. I mean, and probably the more balanced. Again, like you, back in the day, if somebody was trying to, I'm going to jump this chasm, they'd be like, okay, it's a difficult try. That's going to be 4d6 under your dex. It's going to be easy. It's 2d6 under your dex. But there were no hard and fast rules for when to pull that out.
No. It was kind of on, you had to do it on your own. And this is just like, you know, okay, so you're in this situation and, okay, since you made up this entire plan and you're in a better situation than this, you get the advantage, roll two 20s and take the better of the two. Or, okay, you're going to try to leap off the wall in plate mail when it's slippery on the walls, it's raining outside. Roll.
Right. It's the situational factors, yeah, that we're adding in. And plus, then you always had the ability to throw in that X factor when it applied to the, again, to that particular situation.
I definitely think that you can expand upon the advantage, disadvantage, and give people more dice as you, like, instead of, it's only supposed to be just roll one extra, but I would think if it's a really tough disadvantage situation, add an extra die in and make them take the lowest, or if it's a really generous advantage you have, because that can happen, three dice also. I could think it can go up to four dice, five dice, whatever. I think it'd be more random rolls. It'd be fun.
See, now, I think, again, when we talked about this last time, about, like, when we, about rolling characters, you know,
yes,
you know, old school style, I feel, again, you might run into resistance if you did that, because that guy who's playing now would feel, well, wait a minute. Everybody needs, well, I'm not going to say everybody. Again, I'm not speaking for everyone. I feel, my opinion is, I feel right now people need what happens to them to also be able to happen to Tenkar or happen to you if we're at all at the table. You know, if I got something and I got, you know, a random number,
yeah,
that's not in a book, or, you know what I mean?
Well, before you go into any of my games, number one rule is I'm the DM and my whatever I say is final. If you want to talk to me about it, we wait till after the game and we discuss it. And then if I'm being just an absolute jerk about it or just being a douche,
right,
then we compromise and, okay, that won't happen again. I apologize. But again, just like how it should be, the DM is the final arbitrator of the game. So
right, right.
What is the name of the DM's book?
What do you mean?
What is the name of the book?
The Dungeon Master's Guide.
Yeah, it's just a guide.
It's not a rule book, right? It's a guide.
Yeah, it's never been a rule book. I don't even think any of the editions called it a rule book, did they?
Right, but people treat it like it's hard and fast rules. It isn't. Yeah. It's a guide to enable you to make sure that your group has fun at the gaming table. And it's a lot of instructions, and it's a lot of advice. But in the end, the decision comes down to the DM.
I believe it even says that in the book, too. It's just, these are just a guideline, and just have fun. Whatever works for your group works for the game.
And I think 5th edition has gone and really hammered that home, too.
Yes.
I think you're right, yes.
Yeah, 5th edition, more than anything, and that's why it's one of the reasons that I'm a big fan of it, is that it completely tells you, no matter what goes on, we tell you this in the book. If something else works at your table, use that. And, you know, short of just, you know, using it to confound your players or, you know, piss somebody off at your table, I agree with that wholeheartedly. That leads to everybody being a little bit more organic with their play, with especially, you know, just getting everybody on the same page of not feeling confined. Some people feel very confined by rules. Other people enjoy the more structured system. And I feel like the old school guys are a little bit more structured, but at the same time, they like their freedom of being able to homebrew, being able to add and, you know, take stuff away. Like Gary did, he just would pull an arbitrary number in his head. There was nothing written down. There was no chart. There was no, you know, anything to go back and reference to. A lot of guys like that, and some people don't. It's that finding what your players are into and then using that to expand your game.
I guess we're all in agreement with that then. I think that was well said, Sal.
Well, thank you very much. I try.
Yes.
You did well.
Good. Thank you.
The student is now the master.
Can I have a cookie now?
Half a cookie. I'll find what's left behind the... Whatever's left in the couch, we'll pull it out for you.
Excellent.
Disgusting. All right, cool. Let's head into some monster hunters now.
I'm hunting most things that can hunt you, but the way these things move...
Fast for a biped?
Cheetah speed? 50, 60 miles per hour if they ever got out in the open.
Monster hunters.
Hey, friend, I see you're back. What's going on?
Oh, how are you, mate? Doing all right.
Here's a nice ale for you.
Oh, that's the stuff right there. Oh, well, you mind if Iron Wolf kicks his feet up a bit?
Why not? You seem like you've been beating around a little bit today.
Oh, as always, mate, as always. Just got back from a campaign. Had to deal with a bunch of orcs. Because you don't have a lot of orcs around this place, do you?
No, the town guard do a good job of keeping them out of town, so...
Well, don't let that lull you into a full sense of security. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you a story.
Oh.
King Obald of many eras. King Obald goes way back. He's a legend amongst the other old war chiefs all around the realms. Probably one of the most famous orc chiefs in history, if you ask me. But then what do I know? I'm just an adventurer. He was smarter and more intuitive than most of his kind. Obald slew all the other chieftains to take control of the tribes. He was skilled in all arts of war, renowned for his violent temper, bloodlust. Obald proved himself to be a fierce opponent in battle time and time again. And over the years, he consumed other tribes into his own, just kept killing and taking, until he commanded a horde of thousands. Imagine that. Imagine dirtying your trousers seeing 1,000 orcs running at you. Yeah, no siree, no, I'm not this guy. Well, anyway, let me back to the story. Obald leveraged his strengths and influence to carve out a kingdom for himself, right on the spine of the world. That's a mountain range overlooking a bunch of dwarven, human, and elven realms themselves. After years and years of bloody conflict, Obald decided he was going to change things around and did the unthinkable in orc terms. He brokered a treaty with all the enemies surrounding the area. Now that treaty confused a lot of the orcs under Obald's command. This was either a clever ploy by Obald to buy time while he strengthened his army for a final decisive sweep across the savage frontier, or it was a sign that Obald got a bit too long in the tooth and had forsaken the ways of Grumsh, and he needed to be destroyed. I don't know about any of that. All I know is that I'd rather be here sipping on an ale than out there fighting a bunch of orcs. You could take that to the bank, mate. Cheers to you.
Okay, monster hunters, today we are going to be going over another tribal monster that everybody knows. If you've ever played D&D, if you've ever watched the cartoon, if you've almost any fantasy trope has used them, they are our friends, the orcs.
Woohoo!
Yeah, we've used orcs as fodder because, you know, they're... despite their size, they were a step above goblins for a lot of people, and when you have nothing else, you throw them at your players like popcorn. And again, our main purpose here, what we're not going to do, we're not going to obviously go over hit points, we're not going to go over all the changes they've made from 1E up to 5E. However, I'm going to say that I do miss the pig-faced orcs.
Yeah, I think all right. Do.
There's a couple of minis that are out there, a couple of manufacturers who do make the pig-faced orcs. Mm-hmm. They're a little expensive to get into because they're UK guys. But the thing is, I completely miss them. and would love to get one or two to put into the game just for the nostalgia factor when you got your friends and you pull out the pig-nosed orc. That automatically becomes a thing because that was one of my favorite things. However, I'm going to say for their description in 1E, they were given a little bit more of a write-up than some. However, they were kind of stuck underground in 1E. I was looking at it, and their lairs are 75% underground, which they've changed that completely to a point where they're building strongholds and fortresses when they raid towns in 5E. Mm-hmm. They still have that elf hate. They got that elf hate for Corallon, and in 5e they've expanded immensely to make them so much more of almost a storyline, something you can use and not just fodder. A lot like the gnolls, they gave the gnolls the big backgrounds about the abyss and everything else. The new orcs, they've given you a lot of builds, is like the orc war chief, the orogs. Your orogs are basically your elite orcs. They're smarter, they're stronger, and they're more Vulcan. They have no emotions, they have no connections, they don't know what love is, even amongst family and kin. They don't care. They're all about the blood and the slaughter and the battle.
They make them a lot larger too. I mean, they made them more like the Lord of the Ring movies.
What, the Orc High?
Yeah, yes. And with doing that, my favorite thing, though, they actually say in the 5e that they are piggish-faced. And I'm like, okay, great. And I look at the artwork, and of course the artwork is gorgeous, and I do love the way the orcs look, but I would not call them piggish-faced.
No, they're kind of... No, I look at them, they remind me of the Lord of the Ring movies. That's all I can think of.
And again, I don't have any issue with that because I love the Orcai and I love the black orcs from Warhammer and things like that.
Badass. They made them badass now, yeah.
Yeah, like, well, that's when orcs stepped up and they weren't just these schlubs. These guys were badasses who... You know, and then we went on, that evolved in gaming and media and Warcraft. And, you know, we got those orcs who are now, made these giant machines and, that sort of thing with the tusks and the zug-zug and all that sort of nonsense. But one of the things that they've done now in all the new 5e stuff, all of the orcs have that Grumsh Fury.
Mm-hmm.
Where you get the extra damage.
Yeah, an extra 1d8, right.
Yeah, and it makes them pretty badass. And then the Eye of Grumsh, you get the spell casting abilities if they're selected. To me, that it's another depth on NPCs and monsters who were just laid up to they were just stood up to get knocked down. So now you send your players in and they see orcs and they're like, okay, orcs, we know what to do and we're going to run in. We're going to, dazzle these orcs with our brains and then kill them. And now these orcs, while not stupid by any means.
Oh, no, they're not.
No, they've actually raised that bar with the orogs and made it even worse. So now not only are these guys, they're not stupid. They're a little primitive, but some of them go far beyond that and will just... it could decimate your whole party.
Yeah.
We go back. I'm glad they've changed it. I'm again like the gnolls. I'm glad that they have evolved, and I'm glad that they've actually become a 3D thing. They've given them more layers to work with, and given a DM, you could run a whole campaign based in an orc land, and just between tribal customs and the survival aspect, it could be a horrifying thing, and not just, oh, we got to kill the pig face thing and take his pie.
Well, before there were these little tiny creatures, and there was like hundreds of them attacking you at once, but it was just like, meh, you know, a couple good hits, and with the rule that a lot of people ignore that fighters can get multiple hits on them because of their hit dice, it was just, you can dispatch them really easily. I mean, the only deadly point of them back in the original game was that there was just so many of them that you can throw at once, because that's how they travel. Now it's just like, you come five of them, it can wipe out a party if they're not prepared right.
Also, what I'd like to just briefly touch upon are, as I was reading, I was doing over some of the research here, and in the original, they talked about how the orcs hated life.
Yeah.
Okay, which I'm not thrilled with. You know, it's like, that doesn't make any sense. They could be
living.
Yeah, and they're, you know, I understand they're primitive and they're battle raging and the whole bit, but like, it doesn't make sense for them to hate life. They're a people, and they, you know, again, I'm not going to get into that whole thing. However, I read something that how they always found themselves mating with hobgoblins, goblins, and humans. Mm-hmm. Now, we all know half-orcs, you know, from humans, et cetera, et cetera. And I never thought about an orc and a goblin. That to me, that could be an interesting thing. But in 5th edition, they actually give you some kind of an idea, because they talk about Luthic, who was Grumsh's wife, and she's the orc goddess of fertility. So now they made this a thing where orcs just procreate. They just go to town just to go to town. And to me, that makes sense, because, you know, they're basically just keeping their bloodlines going. And then if... To me, I look at it kind of, again, like a biker gang. These guys are just like a militarized biker gang, because they build, you know, they take over the town, they build up defenses, and that's the other thing I like too. They do nothing for comfort. An orc takes over a town, and all they do is add defenses, put spikes up, you know, put up, you know, guard towers. Nothing about, they don't care where they sleep, they don't care where they eat. But as long as defenses are up, that's what the town's for, until it's useless, and then they chuck it and they leave, which I love. I just, it makes these guys seem so much more fierce. And the fact that now they come into the town and now they're looking to procreate because they have to, because that's what their goddess demands. And to me, that, again, it makes them just, it's not, they're not just a mindless wandering horde monster that, you know, you kill and take their money. These things now have a purpose.
Well, Sal, I hate you now. Because I have this image of this orc biker gang that I have to write up for something or other, because it's freaking awesome. And it's funny, because when you're talking about in 1E that 75% of the orcs were underground,
mm-hmm.
you wouldn't really know that from reading the source material back then. Like Greyhawk, the Pomarge, and it lists all the orcs there. Your parties, when they traveled, you know, traveling place to place, were above ground. The most common thing to come across was a band of raiding orcs. I don't even recall that 75% number from the Monster Manual back then. I'm sure it was there. I just, mm-hmm. you know, I haven't read it in God knows how long. But that, you know, it was like an eye opener, because if 3 out of 4 orcs were below ground, that's a lot of orcs.
Yeah.
Yeah,
a lot of orcs, but yeah, and, orc biker gangs. Damn you to freaking hell!
What the other part was too? They kept saying in the 1E how 75% chance if an orc tribe met another orc tribe, they would war. Which, okay, I understand, that makes sense, but in 5E they changed it to when they meet up, if the leader is strong enough. If there was a strong enough dominant force, they wouldn't war. They would just meld and become one unit.
One big tribe.
And then they went into a little bit of the backstory about Many Arrows, which is cool. But definitely now they've actually given an edge to this sword, because it was a little dull back then.
I could definitely see doing a whole campaign revolving just around orcs, like you said, because you can just keep bumping them up in power and just having all these giant orc tribes taking over the area and having the players having to fight them, one big long campaign with them. You could probably do that for a couple levels.
And like just their ecology alone, like if just to go over like the natural stuff that they're doing, this is, you have if you like a if you're more of a political campaign guy,
yeah,
this could so be a political campaign, despite being surrounded by guys, by orcs, who simply want nothing more than to cut your face off. And, you know, between the way their government runs, how the tribes, you know, you make a good NPC, you come up with a strong enough tribal leader, and you are set, because now you could just take this wherever you have to go. Because I know personally, if I was talking to a DM that we were going to play in this game, he's like, yeah, we're going to be with orcs. And you're like, oh, fun. Yeah, green skins, awesome. This will be awesome.
Well, if you think of the old school method, you would right. probably say that, because they were boring.
Exactly, but now that's what I'm saying. You come now, and you're like, oh, we're going to be in Orkland. You're like, oh, crap. All right. So now you got to actually... It's something to worry about. This ain't your daddy's orcs.
No. And it puts a whole new life to them and makes them scary. And like actually all the monsters in 5th edition, they put a nice twist to them and made them more deadly.
I 100% agree with that. They've given everything a reason.
Yeah.
And nothing in that book is just there just because.
Yeah, it doesn't just say like, oh, well, we need a one-hit dice creature, so here's mm-hmm. the orc. We need a half-dice creature, so here's the kobold. They're all given their own niche, their yep. own little part of the monster ecology that makes them viable, useful, and gives them a little reason for being, as opposed to just throwing them out there.
I definitely have to say every day that I'm reading and playing 5th edition, it's winning me over, so I don't mm-hmm. have any, you know, faint damning biases towards this edition, and it's actually making me want to play this more and more than 1st edition at this point. So every time I read these backstories and everything, I'm like, oh, this is really well prepared, and I like yeah. this. I'm jotting down ideas in this little binder I have now with me all the time. Well, it's not really a binder, it's a book, but I can have, oh, it's just amazing some of the things you can come up with by just reading the backstories.
Well, that's just it. With 5e, you can actually play 5e by the book.
Mm-hmm.
I could not play AD&D 1e by the book. Didn't even realize we weren't playing it by the book back then. But.
No one played it. And if anyone played it by the book, you would see how many problems were with the game. There was a couple people I know played exactly by the book, and it was just like, eh.
What, they used weapon speed?
Yeah, they use. I hate
it. Here I am. I'm 48. I still can't.
The most ridiculous thing in first edition was the plus and minuses in to armor class mm-hmm. and the weapon speed. Two things that even the creator himself could not stand but had to put in the book due to his partnership at the time. Used that a couple times with some people, and it was just like, no, dumb, lame, stupid.
We used weapon speed for, I believe, I'm gonna call this and say 4 months
wow.
straight in a game. And that was back when we were kids and we were playing every weekend.
Yeah.
Wow.
We played for 4 months with weapon speed, and then somebody was like, wait a minute, what if we got rid of weapon speed? And I was like, and everybody kind of went, wait, what do you mean? What if we just got rid of weapon speed? Well, that's going to screw the whole game up. And it didn't. No. I just want to point that out. Spoiler alert, it didn't.
No, it didn't ruin the game.
Anyway. The only thing is, like, daggers lost their chance to occasionally strike twice, which is buried somewhere deep in weapon speed.
Anyway, we're getting way off topic here.
Yes.
Sorry. The orcs, tell us how you use them in your game, pathoflegendspodcast@gmail.com.
Or if there's something different you do. That you run them different from the way they're in the book. Do you run them maybe? Do we go back to that age old thing? Are all orcs say? I dare you to say it. Are all orcs bad?
All are orcs bad. Yeah, I can't say it either. Yeah. You're right. let's not go back to that. We don't want to talk about how, you know, they're the ones that are the innocents.
I would like to hear from players is all I'm saying. I didn't say we have to talk about it. I would like to hear from the
people. No. You brought it up. Let's talk about it, pal.
Oh, jeez.
I'm asking our listeners, okay? Do you guys, I'd like to know if you run them different. If you run them different from the way they're in. Oh, also, 1st edition, lawful evil. 5th edition, chaotic evil.
Yeah.
That's a change.
Yeah, a huge change.
I would definitely, the chaotic evil is more fitting for them. I don't know, lawful evil was not.
Well, again, are all orcs bad? That's what I'm throwing out there.
Oh no, that's the that's that paladin thing with the baby orc deal. No, that's a whole podcast of itself.
I said we didn't have to talk about it. I want to hear from the listeners. Everybody listening, both of you guys, write in and tell us.
Both.
Right. So what you're never, I'm not even gonna go there.
Or how about one of the two leave us a voicemail? 702-744-PATH 7284. That's our voicemail line. Give us a holler.
Holla.
And we'll head into what is old now.
What's old now is new.
All right, folks. What is old is now new. I was looking in the 1E Dungeon Master's Guide and the 5E Dungeon Master's Guide, and the power of weapons has certainly been toned down. Whereas 1E went from plus 1 to plus 5, 5E is pretty much a plus 1 to plus 3. But what I'm not seeing is the specialized weapons. Those, like, you know, the plus 1 weapon, plus 3 versus lycanthropes and shape changers, which was always a great weapon. Weapons like that were great to throw in, not just for a specific quest, but to give a player a weapon that inherently was weaker but had the potential to be stronger in certain circumstances. Do you give it up? If you get the plus 2 sword, what's more beneficial? That the flame tongue that has confusing bonuses against multiple different creatures and flames, or a plus 2 weapon that's always going to be plus 2? And I don't see that in 5e, and I think that's a great thing to use and expand upon in the 5e.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my personal favorite was always the flame tongue. I hate to say that. I mean, it was always hidden in some weird place, like a giant's torch was an illusionary, with a flame tongue with an illusion cast on it. But, weapons that did play, you know, like the flame tongue was a plus 1 weapon against generally everything, plus 2 against regenerating creatures, plus 3 versus cold using, plus 4 versus undead. Again, that if you don't want to overpower your players and give them a plus 3 weapon against everything, give them something that's plus 1 and plus 3 against Sal's orcs.
See, now those are scary.
That, you know, that, and that weapon has a specific purpose. You could add in it detects orcs within 100 feet. It cries mommy or something like that in Elvish, or all right, it glows. Because you do have intelligent swords in 5e, and I always thought that an intelligent sword should also be something that had a variable bonus. If you were going to make an intelligent sword, especially when it's only plus 1, give it a purpose. It's plus 3 versus paladins, magic users, whatever character class you really don't like. just me. All right, yep. Just don't do it against bards. I happen to like bards, and most people seem not to, but I do.
But why do you think the reason these things are missing?
I think that they were trying to simplify it.
Do they hint about maybe you should do this, or do they even bring up the fact, or?
I didn't catch it.
I didn't catch it either.
You know, but there's a lot of stuff to 5e that if you, you know, I catch things like, not like you say stuff, wow, this should have been a different section. Go, oh, it makes perfect sense where it is, but it has an effect on a different section of the rules. But I didn't see this in my reading of the 5e DMG. But it was always something that I really liked as a DM, and I even use it in my Swords and Wizardry games when I'm running that recently, is because it makes players really think, yeah, my weapon's only plus 1, but do I... It's plus 4 against, you know, giants. When I come against a giant, that's really important. They might keep that weapon that usually is not as powerful. It's a game balance thing. And again, with 5e, I think, again, it was simplification, and maybe it's harder to balance weapons that have specific abilities. You know, there is a balance factor to it, but if you're playing with an old school mindset, balance is never an issue.
No, it was never about balance in the old school. It was always about whatever the DM wanted. So.
Right, what the DM wanted, and the classes weren't inherently balanced against each other, which is one of the great things about 5e. They actually are. The classes all are viable. You know, yeah. You play the thief in the earlier editions because it was needed in the party, not because it was necessarily the most viable class. Now, 5e, it's fun to play a thief.
Yeah, it is. All the classes are kind of fun. They've made some really good adjustments to a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Except for druids. I don't like druids.
Oh. Why
not? You know.
Hey, we all have our loves and hates.
Yeah, I know. I know.
What, Sal? You got something to say?
No, I was thinking. I was reminiscing to an old school game that we had. How long? I guess we were 13, 14. And I gave one of these guys a named sword. It had nothing on it. There was nothing magical about the sword except it was named. He kept that sword the entire campaign.
Just so
he had magical weapons. Like he wound up getting at that point, it was a +2 flame sword.
Mm-hmm.
You know, crazy original. But he kept that named sword, Man Cleaver. He kept it the entire campaign. Carried it on him. Even if he never wound up, he didn't use it, I don't think, the last year we played. But he kept that sword just because when you had a named sword back in the day, that was a big deal.
Oh, it was, yeah.
It was huge, huge deal. And there was nothing magical about it. And he used it until he got a magical sword that actually did something. But he kept the other sword with him and never got rid of it. And I wonder now if the same thing would be done, if players would keep the sword regardless. Or would they just be like, meh, we're done.
I think it depends on the player, but by giving it a name, you gave it, you made it special. Just like a +1 sword, +3 versus fire-breathing creatures. You know what? That sword is now special. Now, if you give it a name on top of that,
it's huge.
It's huge. If you give it, like I said, a minor ability to detect the running water within, 200 yards, you know what? That thing now is a unique magic item, and unique magic items are something that players... I'm not going to say they hoard, because usually there aren't enough of them to be hoarding them.
Right.
But they cherish, and when a new item comes in for the party to possibly use, it becomes something that it's harder for them to use and give up.
I think more players these days are just going to toss the weapon aside. They may keep it for a short time just thinking it's part of a plot point in the campaign, but after a while they're just going to go, meh, and get rid of it.
Does that make you sad at all?
Kind of does, in a little way. I mean, I know when I was a player and I found something that was named, I held on to it. In fact, I can tell you one campaign that a named ring turned into a whole deity because I kept believing in it. My character just kept believing in it and kept chanting the name over and over again until the DM was just like, you know what? Something finally does happen. And it spawned into this whole entire deity of, I can't even, Caracas was a name or something like that.
Was it B.A. Caracas?
Yes, it was.
Did he hate flying?
Yes,
did he pity the fools?
He pitied the fools. He didn't say Baracus. Caracas.
You know, it was the day. It was the time. It could have been.
You know what? Let's all just move out of 1989. Let's all just catch up now, huh?
Oh, yeah, well. 1989 was back when... Oh, never mind.
That's when it all ended for us, I think, right?
Well, yeah, according to certain people, that's when, we stopped liking anything, so... Anyway...
Redunculus.
Redunculus is right. Let's head into our last segment.
Hocus delirium! Hocus inferium! Spell me a spell to get us out of here! Hey, I did it! I think.
So, Presto's hat this week. I was scouring around and I found what was recommended called DM Binder. Mm-hmm. Now, I opened up an account on here, so dmbinder.com, and okay. I know Sal did too when I pointed it out to him. He put his Shadow of the Demon Lord campaign in there. I opened it up, and I started playing around with it, and it's free to register. Real free account. There's unlimited space here. There's not much to it other than it basically is just an online Word, like an online Office Word. You can keep various folders in there and various characters, and you could format it. But all it boils down to is an online place to keep your campaign stuff. Now, it's awesome as far as jotting down things if you have to jot down something quick and you want to plan out a whole campaign and you have online access. The downside, there's no apps for it. You're like, you can't use it on your phone.
Yeah,
that's rough.
You can't download any of it, as far as I can tell. Sal, did you find any features for downloading things?
I did not, and that was a big weep womp for me, because again, like, you know how much I do everything off my phone, and yeah, I keep everything there, and I use it for note taking, I use it for all that stuff, and there was nothing that made it accessible, and I was like, ugh. So that was one of the big negatives for me.
Well, see, when I was looking at it, and I'm like, you know what? This reminds me of Evernote without the features of being able to use it across all devices and the ability to download. So what it looked like to me. I mean, Evernote has a point that you can't put up a certain information, but I don't think I've ever hit that threshold that I had to wait to the next month. If I wanted to, I'd pay the $2-3 if I was writing that many notes in Evernote, and then I can go to my phone, I can go to my laptop, I can go, you know, to my friend's tablet and quickly download something just in case for the game. Without internet connection, you can't really use this site. It's a great concept, and yes, it's in beta right now, as it says, a little flag says beta on the left. I think with an app, it would make it better. I think with the ability to download, it would make it better. This is great for organization if you want to sit at your house and you want to organize things in one place, but I think there's better places to do it right now until this site steps it up a notch and gives us more features. I think passing on this would be the best thing. Sal, what's your opinion of it?
Again, one of the major reasons, I like I said, when you told me about it, I was really excited and I downloaded it and I was like, this would be great. I stopped using it.
Yeah.
Because of the accessibility and because I am lazy. And I don't always have the laptop nearby.
No.
I am more of a, I've actually gone back to Evernote.
Yeah.
And I mix between that and then the Epic Words.
Yeah, Epic Words.com.
Epic Worlds, yeah. That to me, I think those are my go-tos. And Binder kind of fell off my radar when I lost my mobility with it.
Well, Epic Words doesn't have the mobility either, but at least it has more features that you can have, and you can download stuff as well. Mm-hmm. So,
right.
Yeah, this just, it's an awesome concept. Awesome. It has really good potential to be the new place to put things online for people to go, but cross-device it. When you cross-device it and the ability to download stuff, like if you put a whole thing, for example, they have a page here of a dude that put up a magic item and, you know, it's called List of Awesome and blah, blah. Now, if I wanted to just say I didn't have internet access and my gaming group doesn't allow phones and tablets at the table, which a lot of groups do, they don't want to, you know, deal with that stuff, distractions, I can go, boom, download, print, bring it to my game. Well, no, I can't download, print. I can't figure out how to do that. I guess I'm going to have to copy and paste this into Word, then print it.
Which is a pain.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I probably could do a, from, was it Microsoft Edge, I probably could do a file print, but it may not come out in the right format and blah, 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 blah. So, plus you want to be able to just have it mobile with you. It's just, on. I don't. It just needs a few more features and a few more tweaks, and I think this thing could be the most awesome thing you've ever seen.
But in the meantime, Evernote.
In the meantime, I'm gonna have to say Evernote. Double thumbs up for it. I mean, a lot of people don't like Evernote because I don't know why, but
yeah, it makes no sense.
It really doesn't make any sense because Evernote, while it has a cap of, I don't know exactly what the cap is, but I've never hit the cap, and
I think if you're not uploading photos to it, you're going to be pretty good.
Yeah, if you're just doing text files and stuff like that, boom, Evernote is perfect, because I've written during my lunch at work, I've written tons and tons of, when I was playing a G.I. Joe game, I wrote up tons of, shut up.
I'm not laughing, don't look at
no,
me.
No, it's Sal laughing, because Sal doesn't like
I know. Joe. That's why I'm pretty sure you know it's not me.
It's I wrote up tons and tons of, I had 5, 6, 7 adventures all written out for the games that I was going to do, and Sal's just jealous because he can't think of something like that. Go Cobra. What do you got to say, big man?
I used to have a Cobra voice, but I no longer have it.
Cobra Commander. Sal, you're laughing. What?
See, now I'm laughing with Sal right now. I'm not laughing at you. I'm just laughing with Sal.
I want to hear Sal's opinion. Come on, Sal. Let's hear it.
What do you want my opinion on?
What are you laughing at?
Yeah, because I enjoy your stories.
Oh, yeah.
couldn't reach the mute button in time. I'm sorry.
Yes, the only reason why Eric wasn't laughing is because he had the mute button at the first.
So
no,
our listeners, have you guys ever made
G.I. Joe story
or any of the Hasbro stories?
What? So we played in the game that was G.I. Joe,
not,
man.
I am not belittling you. I applaud your creativity.
You know, I had six people that played in the game, so shut up.
Look, I'm not saying anything negative, man. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
So now anyway. Just awkward. Now I just feel awkward.
Now it's just awkward, yeah.
Now it's just awkward.
Oh, God.
Yeah, you're just an awkward Heyman guy, Sal. That's all.
Oh, Yo-Jo.
So with, on that, since we're laughing too much and the show is degraded into nothing now, Path of Legends Podcast at gmail.com, 702-744-7284 is the hotline to give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, and we will play it on the show.
If dare you.
Yeah.
Dare you to call.
If you have any ideas or you have a segment you want to throw into the show, give us a holler. We can work something out because we're about the community. We like feedback. People have given us lots of feedback in the last couple of weeks of what we want. We should put in segments, and that's what we're trying to guide it by.
You know what? Actually, I'd like to address that.
Yeah.
The feedback given has been legitimate, constructive feedback, and for the most part, I will say that the gaming community that we've been exposed to, the ones who've actually contacted us on this, it's been amazing feedback, and there has not been a lot of trolls.
Well, I've only seen.
I know we're new.
Yeah,
I know we're new. Give
us
time.
So we had to build up our trolliness.
Yeah, we got. I know, but still, I want to. I think a lot of people pay a lot of attention to the negative. A lot. I want to give a shout out to the good side of this, that we haven't seen a lot of the negatives just for the sake of being negative. There's been one or two, but they get ignored, honestly. And the people who have given us feedback, I appreciate it. I know Vince appreciates it, and Eric appreciates it. I know everybody wants to see more people, especially the fans, the community, get involved and give us your ideas. You know, tell us what you like, what you don't like. And we're trying to make this a community thing for everybody to get involved and get together. You know, even if not on the same page, at least we're all in the same room, right?
Okay, sure.
Oh, man. Well, really? Really?
We're at the same gaming table. How about that?
Exactly. We're all at the same table.
Okay, Sal, let me push you off your soapbox now, all right?
All right, fine.
Yeah, fool. Anyway, so we're going to say peace, love, and gaming. Good night, everybody.
Where's my weather dominator?
Oh, jeez.
The Path of Legends podcast is an opinion-based podcast on the TSR Podcast Network. And this podcast is produced for entertainment purposes only. All other uses are prohibited. If you'd like to contact us, please visit us at tsrpn.com or email us at pathoflegendspodcast@gmail.com.